أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين Brothers and sisters, we're gathered tonight and we want to commemorate that martyrdom of the Sayyid al-Shuhada. We're building up gradually to the day of Ashura. But for us, this is an exercise where we can all be reminded of the teachings of Quran and Sunnah. Because we know that we have an Imam who's waiting for us. And our Imam who's waiting for us is waiting for some changes to take place in us. When enough change takes place in us as mu'mineen, then Allah will give permission to the Imam to return. And one of the best times that we can do this is now the beginning of the Islamic New Year. We're here, everybody's in the spirit, we're listening to these teachings of Quran and Sunnah. Now is the time to make some changes. So what we're doing is to go over Surah Yusuf. It's an excuse. Going over Surah Yusuf is an excuse for us to be reminded of those teachings of Islam, Quran and Sunnah, and then look for practical lessons. We're here to be inspired. When we hear the story of Yusuf, it's not just history for us, what happened at that time, but rather, what can we do to please the Imam of our time? How can we see the Yusuf of our time? So we're now on verse number 58.
وَجَاءَ إِخْوَةُ يُوسُفْ فَدَخَلُوا عَلَيْهِ فَعَرَفَهُمْ وَهُمْ لَهُ مُنْكِرُونَ
After some years, the brothers of Yusuf came into his presence. He recognized them, but they didn't know who Yusuf was. Now, the word some years, that's from me. That's not, it says Ja'a, they came. Who came? The brothers of Yusuf, they came, and they're now in the presence of Yusuf, but it is some years, maybe 20, 30 years later from the time where the whole story of Yusuf began. Because in the riwayat, it's mentioned that Yusuf was either 7 or 9 when he first saw that dream. Then we know the story. After he saw the dream, then somehow it got out to the brothers. The jealousy that they already had got worse. They decided, they plotted against Yusuf, and they ended up taking him and putting him in a well. We'll get rid of Yusuf. After that, we learn from the ahadith, they sold their own brother into slavery. Okay, so what happens then? He goes to the house of the Aziz. When he goes to the house of the Aziz, he's a young man, and he stays there until he's around 18. When he's 18 is when the whole problem with Zulaikha starts, and being infatuated with him and trying to get Yusuf to have an affair. Yusuf tries to fight her off. After that, Yusuf's then thrown in prison. In prison, he stays there for a number of years. So add that on, right? From 7 or 9, let's say, when he saw the dream, up until. And then finally, after being in prison, then he tells them about the drought, meaning the guy comes to him in the prison. He mentions there's a dream that the king has. Nobody knows what the answer is. What is the answer? He tells you, look, there's something that's about to happen to your country. For 7 years, you're going to be having a wonderful time. Crops, plenty, everything will be good for the first 7 years. After that, the tough times start. So now what we're talking about in this verse, when the brothers of Yusuf come to see Yusuf, is during the tough times. So the second 7 years. So we add that onto that initial time that we started with. So 20, 30 years, and they come into the presence of Yusuf. Now, again, when they see Yusuf, right? Why wouldn't they recognize him? Why does he know who they are? What's Yusuf looking like or dressed like? Yusuf is the number one under the king in this country. So he obviously would be wearing the clothes of an Egyptian, right? He's a minister, right? Or he has a position, he's a vizier or the aziz. Secondly, he's probably talking to them through an interpreter. He's not speaking to them in their language, right? They come in, normally when you come into another country, you're speaking the language of those people. They come in, they meet, and they're talking. So this guy wearing whatever outfit they would wear at that time, and now he's speaking to them, and you wouldn't even, it wouldn't even cross your mind that it might be my brother. So they didn't know who Yusuf was, but Yusuf knew exactly who they were. Yusuf knew exactly who they were. Now, there's a possibility that, because there's a discussion amongst ulama, Ayatollah Jawhari Amadi, may Allah elevate his station and he preserve him for us, he says that in actuality, Yusuf alayhi salam achieved the lofty spiritual station of imama. Some prophets became imams. Ibrahim was an imam. Other prophets became imams. He says Yusuf alayhi salam was an imam. In any case, imams, now we'll just give us a little reminder for ourselves, imams also know our language. Right? Imam Mahdi knows the language of all of us. If he were to come here, we were to see him, wouldn't be like we'd have to get a translator and talk to him in Arabic. No, the imam knows everyone's language. And Yusuf alayhi salam, let's say he was an imam, let's say he was an imam at that time, and he knows everyone's language, so he, even if he was just a regular person, you've been living in a country for 30 something years, you're speaking to them through an interpreter, but of course Yusuf knows what they're saying. And our imam knows what we're saying. We have hadith about this, that the imam knows the languages of the people. More than one hadith, this one is from Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam. Says Kana Ridha alayhi salam, that Imam Ridha was like this. Yukallimu an-nas bilughatihim. Imam Ridha used to speak to everyone in their own language. Wa kana wallah afsaha an-nas wa alamahum. The other thing that's interesting is that when he was speaking the language, he knew it better than they did. Afsahu an-nas, more eloquent, knows the language, speaking in a wonderful, everybody in their own language. So he says, بِكُلِّ لِسَانٍ وَلُغَ. Every language, every tongue, Imam Ridha could speak. Our imam is also like this. The guy who's telling the story says this. He says, I was shocked that the imam would know everyone's language. Like speaking to them in their own language, he knows the language better than them. He says, I was shocked. I mentioned this to the imam. How is it that you know everyone's language? The imam says this, أَنَا حُجَّةُ اللَّهِ. I am God's حُجَّة عَلَى خَلْقِهِ, on his creation. وَمَا كَانَ يَتَّخِذُ حُجَّةً عَلَى قَوْمٍ وَهُوَ لَا يَعْرِفْ لِغَاتِهِ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would not take anyone to be a hujjah or a proof over a nation if that hujjah didn't know the languages of the people. The thing is, the imam, not only does he know our languages, he knows us as individuals. He's seen us. He may have spoken to us. I want to read some of the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt, right, in this regard. The same way that the brothers of Yusuf didn't know they were talking to Yusuf, we may have had a conversation or interacted with our imam and not known. It's possible. So the brothers, وَجَاءَ إِخْوَةُ يُوسُفْ فَدَخَلُوا عَلَيْهِ. The brothers of Yusuf came and they entered into his presence. فَعَرَفَهُمْ, he knew them. وَهُمْ لَهُ مُنْكِرُونَ. And they didn't know who he was. This is what the hadith says about our imam, Imam al-Mahdi. يَتَرَدَّدُ بَيْنَهُمْ. The imam of the time walks back and forth amongst the people. وَيَمْشِي فِي أَسْوَاقِهِمْ. He goes to their markets and he walks in the markets. The imam is amongst us, sees us, and is walking in the markets. He says, وَيَتَعُوا فُرُشَهُمْ. The imams even walked on their carpets. The imam knows everyone that well. He's walked on their carpets. He's seen everybody. But they don't know him, right? Until Allah gives him permission to identify himself. So the same thing that we're hearing in this story of Yusuf, that Yusuf's brother came and they saw Yusuf and they didn't know who he was and he knew exactly who they were. Has Imam Mahdi seen us? And since he has seen us, 100% he's seen us. Because our actions, as Muslims, we know, as Shias, our actions are presented to the Imam of the time. And the Imam is either happy when he sees those actions, when he gets that report of what we're doing, or he's not happy. But the Imam has seen, knows, yeah, 100%. Walked on our carpets, met us. Oh, we didn't know who he was, but he knew who we were. So, again, there are some people who see the Imam and recognize the Imam. And again, we know as Shias, if anybody comes to us, brothers and sisters, if I come to you and I say that, you know, I'm a messenger from Imam Mahdi, you know, if you want to donate a little money to the cause, you know, Imam Mahdi and I, right? We know, what's our first reaction? If somebody comes over and says that they know the Imam and they have a connection, and what is our reaction? No, get out of here, you know. Anybody starts making, I'm a messenger, you know, there's a checkbook here, sign it, you know, I'm the son of the Mahdi, any of that crazy stuff, we know. We don't get fooled by any of that. So that's true. We don't get fooled by any of that. But it's also true, some people have seen the Imam, right? We're saying that the Imam is walking on people's carpets and walking and seeing everybody. And some have seen the Imam and recognized the Imam. I want to give you a couple of stories about this. Right? Remind ourselves of the thing. The Mahdi right now is watching this majlis, right? He knows all of us. They said that there was one of the shuhada, they said that he used to always, this is a true story, they said that we noticed that on occasion he would stand up. He was in the bunker, he was on the battlefield, he's in the bunker, and on occasion he would stand up and put his hand on his chest. Right? And we're watching him do this, and we used to think, you know, maybe he's reading Ziyarat Ashura, maybe, you know, he's standing up, he's doing salam to the Imam, you know, we don't. He says that this remained a secret for us. Why is it that he would stand up? On occasion, every once in a while, he would stand up and he would put his hand on his chest. A few hours before the martyrdom of this shaheed, right, not while he's trying to come and get privileges and make us think he's anything great, because sometimes the shuhada would reveal sometimes some of the spiritual gifts they had before their martyrdom. Right? I'm not getting any worldly benefit from it. So it says that he came to me a few hours before his actual martyrdom. He said, look, I want to tell you a secret. Because for the brothers in the bunker, it was a little bit of a mystery. Why would this guy do this? What is he doing? Just question mark. He says that what happened is, Imam Mahdi would come in here and he would visit the brothers. Right? On the battlefield, he would come in. So when I could see the presence of the Imam, I would stand up and I would salute the Imam. So is it possible? Yeah, the Imam is seeing all of us. He's seeing us right now. But some see him, some recognize him, some know him, some don't. Another example. Again, these are from reputable sources that we don't know. There's no way the person's getting any sort of benefit or anything like that. Inshallah, what will be nice if we get out of this is the idea of, instead of going through life alone, we go through life with an Imam. Right? There's some people, when they're going through life, not only is my Imam seeing, can I do tawassul to my Imam at any time? Yes. Can I talk to my Imam? My Imam is witnessing what I'm going through. My Imam feels for me. And the hadith it says, if you become sick, we become sick. If you make dua, we say ameen. So there's some people who take it a step further. I don't go through life alone. I always have my Imam with me. Next story. This one is about Imam Khomeini. May Allah have mercy on his soul and elevate his station with Ahlul Bayt. What happened was they had reached a critical stage in the Islamic Revolution, right? The Shah is still in power, and the situation is that now they've declared martial law. They've declared martial law, and the Mu'mineen amongst themselves are like, what should we do? Should we break martial law? If we break martial law, God knows what happened. How many people will be killed, right? So there's some of the Muslims are like, no, if we don't break martial law, we stay in our houses, they'll come, they'll kill everybody. It'll end before it even starts. We won't have such a revolution. So some people are saying, no, go out. Some people are saying, no, don't, it's not the time. How much bloodshed, how much loss of life? So Imam Khomeini's listening to the Mu'mineen. People talking and speaking. Imam Khomeini's listening. So Imam Khomeini, they said he went to his room. Right? It's a little area where he would go. He goes to his room, let's say a half an hour or something like that, and Imam comes out. He's got a paper, and he says, look, I want you to read this paper, broadcast this. So they go over and they read the paper, and it's to break the martial law. I want everybody to come out, haram, whatever, stay, go out in the streets, do your job, right? Now, one of the Ayatollahs, his name was Ayatollah Talaqani, who was a great man, shaheed later, right? Been in prison. Imam Khomeini had a lot of respect for this man. Ayatollah Talaqani calls up. And he is concerned. He's like, now is not the time for us to go over and break martial law. How many people are going to be killed? And he's so concerned, he wants to speak to Imam Khomeini. And Imam Khomeini, because he had so much respect for Ayatollah Talaqani, the people were like, look, let's let him talk to Imam Khomeini directly. We can't tell him. I mean, Imam Khomeini said, this is the order, this is what we're doing, and this is what we're doing. I mean, he says, break martial law, we're going to break it. But Ayatollah Talaqani is concerned. Let him go over and let him talk to Imam Khomeini personally. So they start talking. And he's explaining, and he's concerned, and he's saying this, and he's saying that, and right? Imam Khomeini's like, inshallah, it's going to be okay. Inshallah, it's going to be all right. Right, I've heard you. Alhamdulillah, right. But inshallah, victory. Inshallah, it's going to be okay. But that keeps insisting, the Ayatollah. He keeps insisting. Finally, Imam Khomeini sees that he won't stop. He says, if I tell you Allah said it, then what? If the command didn't come from me, if it came from Imam Mahdi, then what? They said, Ayatollah Talaqani, the phone just drops from his hand. So is it possible? 100%. The other thing to keep in mind about the presence of the Imam, and if we see him or don't see him, is the role that he's playing in all of our lives. Once there was a person named Sheikh Hassan. Sheikh Hassan. So Sheikh Hassan, what happened was that he really wanted to see the Imam in person and recognize the Imam. And what I mean, obviously they do. I mean, who wouldn't want to see the Imam of the time be present in the company of the Imam? So Sheikh Hassan really wanted to see his Imam. And finally he ended up seeing the Imam. He ended up seeing the Imam. But when he ended up seeing the Imam, Sheikh Hassan started to complain to the Imam. You know how long I've been trying to... Kind of complain. I mean, you're talking to the Imam, the love of your life, the Imam, beloved Imam. He starts to complain to the Imam that, look, I've been searching for you for so long. I wanted to see you. I wanted to talk to you. And so then what happens is the Imam says that there have been a lot of incidents in your life, different difficult things that happened to you. Let's say you were going to meet these people, and it didn't happen. And if you did, this would have happened. The guy starts remembering, yeah, I was in this tough situation, I got out of this. I was in this, and the Imam reminds him, you were in this situation and this situation. He said, that was me behind the scenes getting you out of it. The guy said, I felt so ashamed. The Imam was with me, watching, helping, assisting, behind the scenes, making it happen for me. He said, I was so ashamed. The Imam cares about each individual Shia. Each individual knows them, what they're going through. There's some people have the ma'rifah to go over and in every sort of incident to wassail to the Imam, right? But otherwise, we're not alone. Brothers and sisters, we're not alone. We have our Imam with us. So let's go back to our verse. So what's our verse? Our verse is that the brothers of Yusuf came into his presence, and when they came into his presence, he knew who they were, but they didn't know who he was. So with us, because when we go over these verses, we're looking for inspiration, for instructions, how can I serve the cause better? One of the questions that's raised is this: how come Yusuf, alayhi salam, didn't identify himself in the beginning to his brothers? In the beginning, he comes in, he knows who they are, he sees them, he recognizes them. He could just say right then, in the beginning, in that first meeting, he say that, I'm Yusuf, I remember you guys, you were my brothers, y'all did that dirt to me a long time ago. But Yusuf alayhi salam doesn't do that. Why not? Why not? Well, obviously Yusuf alayhi salam, if you see him doing any action, it's because he's guided by God. He's ma'asum. He's guided by God. But what we learn from the tafsir is that he wanted, and of course God wanted this, he wanted that his brother Binyamin see the results of taqwa and sabr. The reason that Yusuf and his brother were oppressed was because of that connection that their father had with them. Why did their father love them more than his brother, their brothers? Lillah, because of their connection with God, right? They had taqwa, they did patience. Yusuf said, like not Yusuf said, but what we learn from the tafsir is that Yusuf wanted to, when the results are going to happen, when it will finally be exposed that I am Yusuf, this is what God did to me. I did my responsibility and this is how God honored me and favored me and now he's granted me kingdom. He says that he wanted his brother Binyamin to be there also. This is in the tafsir. Right? So that special moment when I'm finally there and Allah gives the reward of taqwa and sabr in this world, I want my brother to participate and be there. So, now there's lessons, things that we get from the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt in this regard. This first hadith is from Imam al-Jawad. The Imam gives us instructions. The instructions from the Imam are about not speaking before it's time. Right? Yusuf alayhi salam, when we see in our story, he didn't share who he was because it wasn't time yet. There's a time and place for everything. Let everything that's supposed to happen happen. Then once it's time, once my brother is here, once I've arranged all of that, let him be here. Let him see the results of taqwa and sabr. If he had said it earlier, he would have ruined it. Brothers and sisters, if we think carefully, aren't there times when we might speak before it's the proper time? Let's say in our personal lives, with our family members, right? Somebody does something. How many times is it that all of us, happen for all of us, that we say something, we blurt something out, and then afterwards we feel a little regret? I wish I hadn't said that. If I could take it back, if I could think about it. Sometimes it's something other than that. Sometimes it's like Yusuf. There's a plan in place. Yusuf alayhi salam, he's going to rise to kingdom, and he wants his brother to be there and see the results of taqwa and sabr in this world. Sometimes revealing our plans, explaining things, saying things before they're ready ruins them. Sometimes I can do it in my personal life, in my family. I say something, I need to correct somebody on an issue. Somebody does something which is inappropriate. I could either come down like a ton of bricks right now, shouting and screaming, or I'm a little patient. I wait till the time is right. I say it and then it has the proper effect. Even they tell us with Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar, which is a duty that all of us had, and Imam Hussein died for, right? He says, and I came out in order that I do Al Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahy al Munkar. Our responsibility is to enjoin what's right and forbid what's wrong. Imam Hussein did that. We also have that duty. The hadith says that Allah doesn't like the weak mu'min. Allah doesn't like the weak mu'min. And they said, Ya Rasulullah, who's the weak mu'min? He said, it's the mu'min who, when they see the opportunity to stop wrong from happening, they don't say anything. Right? If the conditions for Amr Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar are there, I'm supposed to say something, to do something. The challenge is though, right? The challenge is sometimes there's munkar happening, wrong happening, and I can't address everything at once. Right? I can't stop all munkar from happening because one of the conditions for Amr Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar is to see, will it have any effect if I say it? Will it make it worse if I say something? If it's going to make it worse and it's not going to help the situation, turn the person off from the deen altogether, then no, I won't do it. Does that mean I abandon it altogether, just tolerate everything? You know, let's say a relative comes to me, you know, I'm gay. Okay, that's okay. No, woman's like, no, you're not. I need some help. So what happens is for us, right? We don't just tolerate everything. No, we Amr bin Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. All we're doing is we're waiting to see that the situation is right. Right? What can I address right now? What can I say right now? What will have effect? What will bring this person back to God? So we learn from those senior ulama. They say, don't just go over and blurt everything out. You see me for the first time. Right? You haven't seen me in 10 years. You're like, brother, you know, this is haram, and that's haram, and that's haram. You know, thank you. Khudafis, I'll see you later. You don't do that, obviously.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
So what happens is that we don't do that. What we do is because we do have a responsibility, we see what's the person ready for, right? So you see me, there's three things that I'm doing wrong. Two of them you can't touch right now because I'm not ready for it. One thing if you mention it, I'll take it. Or let's say I'm committing a lot of sin, right? And you tell me less sin, right? I'll take that. Well, less sin is better than a lot of sin. Right? So you go over, you see what I'm ready for, when you want to do Amr Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar to me, and then you go over and you say something to me. So sometimes saying too much before the situation is ready, before the person is ready to take it, might turn the person off. But if you waited, If you were patient, you waited for the right time, the person was in the right mood, and you said what you had to say, it would have effect. So let's go over that hadith. This is from Imam Jawad. He says, idharu shay, so expressing something, sharing something, giving something to others, qabla an yustahkam, before it becomes firm. Let's say you want to set up a business. Let's say somebody's trying to get married, right? Before it becomes firm, if I go over and announce my business, right? I'm going to set up a small business. But if I go over and start shouting and screaming before that, somebody else will hear, oh, really? You want to set up a car? You want to start renting out a car rental? That sounds good. I might go and ruin it for you. Right? So the hadith says, expressing something before it becomes firm, mafsadatun lah. It can end up corrupting that thing. We want to wait, be wise, and we look at the appropriate time. When should I say what I'm about to say? Are the grounds ready? Are the grounds firm? Can I say it? Or is no? One of the times that I wait, and I'll say it later. So it's one of the things that we can get. The other one, which is interesting for us to keep in mind, is the idea of the rewards of making another believer happy. We have a hadith about this. The rewards about pleasing another mu'min. This is one of those easy ways to get into paradise. One of the easy ways to get into paradise is to make another believer happy. Let me read you a hadith. This first one is from Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He says, ma ubidallah bi shay'in ahabba ila Allah min idkhal as-surur ala al-mu'min. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not worshipped with anything which is greater in his eyes, more beloved than making another believer happy.
Salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Let me give you another one, even more encouragement for myself and for you. This is from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
He says, man sarra mu'mina, whoever, brothers and sisters, because we're in a community of mu'mineen, right? We're married to a mu'min, or our brother is a mu'min, or my sister is a mu'min, or friends, family. This is opportunity all around us. People I'm associating with in the masjid. Man sarra mu'mina, whoever makes a mu'min happy, faqad sarrani, has made me happy. Whoever makes a mu'min happy has made the Prophet happy. Wa man sarrani faqad sarrallah. Whoever makes me happy has made God pleased. So an easy way for me to get into paradise is by making other believers happy, making life with me as a believer a pleasant experience. If I can go out of my way to do something good for somebody, even something small, sometimes smiling at somebody, sometimes encouraging them, talking to them, spending time with them, telling them they're important. There's a lot of ways for me to go over and do this. Now, one of the things, who do we start with? Who to start with? There's a lot of mu'mineen, and we should try and make mu'mineen happy. Great. Who should we start with? Brothers and sisters, one of the first people we want to start with are our own parents. We want to start with our own parents. Let me read you a hadith. The hadith is from Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He says that you should do this birr, you should do acts of righteousness, kindness, barru aba'akum. So do these acts of kindness to your parents, aba'akum. Right? He says, yabarrakum abna'ukum. If you do this, what will happen? Your children who learn by example, if you're one of those people who, given the opportunity, will try and create happiness and pleasure in the life of your parents, this is different than the West. We're different than the West, by the way. We're different than, we might be born here, but that doesn't mean that we're Americans first and Muslims second. Like Malcolm X said, he was like, if a cat was born in the oven, would you call it a biscuit? We're Muslims. First, we're Muslims. We're different. Our culture is different, right? Others might not respect their parents. They might not be kind to them. We are. We have love and respect, reverence for our parents. Reverence for our parents. So the hadith says, if you're like that, your children will also be like that with you. If you're kind to your parents, then later when you're old and you don't have anybody to look out for you, your parents, your kids who learn by example from you will be like that to you. By the way, whether our parents are Muslim or non-Muslim, same thing, parents. Right? My parents are practicing, not practicing, parents. And out of our parents, the person more emphasized to be kind to are our mothers. This hadith, that a man comes to the Prophet, and he says that, who should I show kindness to? The Prophet says, your mother. He says, then who? Thumma man. He says, your mother. He says, then who? Then, again, your mother. Three times, and then who? And then your father. Little sisters are laughing. That's okay. We're kind to our mothers. That's part of it. We're kind to our parents, especially our mothers. You have the hadith that paradise is under the feet of the mothers. Right? We're kind to them. Yeah, that's natural. We're kind to them. Now, also other mu'mini, trying to help and assist one another, acts of kindness. Actually, I was listening to the speech before myself, where brothers and sisters were trying to encourage us and tell us about the Islamic Center that we have here and giving a little bit in the cause and stuff like that, which is really good, right? Man sarra mu'mina, whoever makes a mu'min happy. And what better than to strengthen this fortress of Islam that's here, which is strategically important for us. Alhamdulillah, we have the presence of a very good Allah, right? What better that we've done even a little bit? Let me give you a hadith. There was a man who made a wasiyah after his death. You know, after we die, we're allowed to use 1/3 of our wealth as we would like. When you die, immediately certain laws apply to you. Inheritance is taken from you. Your children and your wife, and they become owners of your property. Unless you've made a wasiyah. And how much a wasiyah you can make? Only in 1/3. Only in 1/3 of your wealth can you make a wasiyah, that they do a certain thing with your wealth. This guy made a wasiyah that after I die, he had a warehouse of dates. A warehouse of dates. He's like, after I die, he was a clever mu'min. After I die, I want the Prophet of Allah to give these dates in the way of God. And the Prophet did that. Wasiyah, the Prophet giving those dates. How much thawab? The Prophet, with that ikhlas, he's giving dates. Beginning of Islam, establishing the Islamic center. He'll give it. Afterwards, this is from the word Prophet now. Afterwards, there was one beat up date left. Maybe rotten, maybe beat up, right? One date left. And the Prophet picked up that date. He said that if he had given this one beat up date himself, it would have had more thawab than me as the Prophet giving his whole warehouse of dates. Brothers and sisters, we don't want to miss out on the opportunity to give in the way of Imam al-Hussein. Even if it's a little bit, maybe that little bit will save us. Maybe that little bit will save us. Now, I'm going to say something that's a little scary. Brace yourselves, everybody. It's a little scary. I'm saying it. You're not guilty. I'm saying it. I want to share a secret of Hezbollah. Don't run out of the masjid. I'm saying you're not guilty. A secret of Hezbollah. One of the secrets of Hezbollah is this, that when they want to establish something, when they want to build something or do something, what they'll do is they'll get mu'mineen in that area, and they'll say, look, everybody give what you can. For instance, you're a doctor, you're a dentist, give me 2 hours. What can you give? I'm a teacher, I'm a whatever. Everybody give a little bit of what you can. Everything's not money, right? We need volunteers, for instance. We need help in the center. For instance, here, alhamdulillah, brothers and sisters, we have a Muslim school. Now, you guys know, those of you who are my age or a little older, how bad things have gotten. Huh? How bad are schools right now? How bad are they gonna get? Right? Because it's not Akhir al-Zaman yet, right? Well, is it Akhir al-Zaman, but how bad is it gonna get? How wild and how crazy? So, if I have an environment where my children, the children of mu'mineen, can be in a fairly safe environment where they're encouraged to pray and fast and do those wajibat, how important is that? If I can contribute in any way to such a school, what should I do? In any way. There's an area where people hear the ma'arif of Ahlul Bayt. Even if I can give an hour, if I can give a little money, whatever it is, to support and help, that's something we definitely want to do. So, especially brothers and sisters, one of the things that we really want to do is when we're younger, right? There's sometimes when somebody says, look, I'm at the end of my life, I'm an old man. I'm not old, by the way. I'm not old. But somebody might feel that, no, I'm old and, you know, yeah, now it's time for me to go and give back to the cause. You know what we should do, though, brothers and sisters? Early in our lives. Early in our lives. What can I give to the cause of Islam? What can I give to the cause? When I'm young, some of the lives of some of the shuhada, when you study their lives, you see that early in their lives, they would show acts of generosity and then they would be blessed with tawfiqat later. Let me give you one story. One story. One of the shuhada. When he was a little boy, one of his classmates remembers this story. He says that I had gotten into a fight with another kid. Right? Got into a fight with another kid. Kid beat me up. I'm bloody and bruised. I go back and I tell my dad. Right? So what happens? I come home. My dad sees me bloody and bruised. And what happened? Fulan, let's call him Hassan. Let's call him Taqi, whoever he was. He beat me up. He bloodied me. Dad was like, what? He did? Where is he? Such and such a place. Oh, now dad's out and I'm out. And we're hunting. And we walk and we see the kid. And the kid sees us and the kid starts to run. Right? Hiding. And I know where he is. He says that my friend who later became a shaheed, he came out. A little kid. He came out. He's like, he came right in front of my dad. He's like, I hit your son. We were playing around and we got upset and, you know, I made a mistake and I hit him. And, like, that's my friend. No, you didn't hit me. I know who hit me. You didn't hit me. No, I hit you. I know it was me. I hit him. I bloodied his face. That's all right. I'm ready. I will take whatever punishment it is you want to give out. I'm going to take it right now. Beat me up. And so I'm like, no, that's not him. It's Fulan. It's not him. He's hiding. He's over there. And this guy's like, no, it's me. I hit him. I beat him up. I'm sorry about it. Beat me. It's okay. I'll take it. A little bit of lack of nafs. The dad sees this guy's over there. So, I mean, you look at his face and you're like, no, this guy needs, you know, no, I made a mistake. I beat him up. Here, hit me. The dad was like, I can't. Come on, I don't know what's the story, but no, I can't go over and be, I'm going to forgive you, it's okay. The guy says, later I went back to my friend. And I was like, what did you do? What were you doing? Why would you do that? You're a little kid. You're my dad. He's serious. He's going to beat you up. He said that other guy was a yatim. The other guy was about to get beat. He's an orphan. He doesn't have a dad. When he gets beat, he's psychologically, you know what it is to get beat up and you don't have any support, any help? I got a dad, I'll take it, I'll get beat up. Let me save somebody. Just a small act of sacrifice from the time you're young. I'll wait till I'm 50. No, now, what can I do? Can I sacrifice? Even a little bit in the way of Islam. Now, brothers and sisters, inshallah, we want to go to Karbala now. And we want to remember a yatim who sacrificed, who recognized his imam, and he sacrificed.
As-salamu ala al-Husayn wa ala Ali ibn al-Husayn wa ala awlad al-Husayn وعلى أصحاب الحسين.
Brothers and sisters, we want to remember a wonderful young man named Qasim. Now Qasim was someone who wasn't even baligh. Qasim was there and he was the orphan of Imam al-Hasan. Imam Hussein alayhi salam had raised this young man from the time he was, let's say, 3 or 4. So this young man was there. And he's raised in the household of Hussein, and even though he's not baligh, he still recognizes that haq is facing batil, and that his imam, the imam of the time, is alone.
And Qasim says that, no, I want to sacrifice myself. On the day before the battle began, Imam Hussein told his followers, he said, look, you are wonderful people, you've sacrificed, but no, they don't want you, they only want me. I'm telling you, everybody go, flee, leave. And the companions refused. The companions said, no, we're going to stay here. We're going to die. If we are cut into pieces, if we are burned, if we are brought back to life and killed again, we will never abandon you. And one of those people was Qasim. And Qasim told him to his mom, he said, he wanted to know if he was going to make it. He says, I want to die. I want to sacrifice. The imam told him, he said, Qasim, how do you find death? If you stay here and we die, how do you find death? He said, Ahla min al-asal. He said, sweeter than honey, dying for the Imam of my time, the Wali of my time, and the way of Islam, it's sweeter than honey. The Imam said, yes, you're going to die, but you're going to die, and it's going to be a struggle for you. Qasim, it's going to be a struggle for you. On the day of Ashura, after the companions had sacrificed themselves, came the time for the turn of the family of the Prophet to come forward. They said, فَخَرَجَ غُلَامٌ. A young man came out. كَأَنَّ وَجْهَهُ. As if his face was a part of the moon. This little young man comes out, maybe so small that he can't even wear battle armor. He's not baligh yet. He comes out and now he's offering himself to the Imam of the time. I'm young, I'm small, but I offer myself to you. The Imam refused to give permission for him to fight. He started begging the Imam. They started holding on to one another. The Imam fainted. I have to offer the yatim of my own brother Hassan, I have to offer him in the battle. The young man insisted. He said, no, I want to fight. Give me the opportunity. It's demanding and demanding and demanding till finally the young man is given the opportunity. So the young man comes out and he's reciting poetry. He said, In tankuruni fa'ana far'ul hasani. He said, if you don't know me, then I'm the son of Hassan. And he comes out trying to fight. Faja'ala yuqatil. The young man begins to fight, trying to fight. And then they mention even the name of the person who hit him. That the guy came and he went and he hit the young man and he hit him on the head. And Qasim falls face forward into the ground and he calls out, Ya Amma, oh my uncle. They said Imam Hussein was waiting. It was like a falcon attack. The Imam came rushing in. He came in and he hit the killer, cut his arm, and the man screamed out. The cavalry came to save him. Imam Hussein's fighting the cavalry. The cavalry ended up trampling that man. And Qasim is there. And the Imam, they said, they saw the Imam on standing over Qasim. Qasim's legs are kicking in the sand, this young man. He says, very difficult for your uncle. You called him and I wasn't able to save you. I wasn't able to rescue you. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Mutam that we become the soldiers of the Imam of our time. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Ya Hussein.
Ya Hussein.
Ya Hussein.
Ya Hussein.
Ya Hussein.